Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, and I'm here with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Gail, and hello to you. Thank you for joining us today on Local Talk.
It wasn't a bad weekend weather-wise in the KHOI listening area, but we definitely had a lot of rain around Central Iowa on Friday. On the news, they were saying that some areas got up to 9 inches of rain, and there was flooding in many nearby towns, including Jewell and Story City.
Flood warnings were issued for both Skunk River and Squaw Creek, and the Skunk River was more than 2 feet above flood level, and flooding did occur in Ames.
Yeah, I was out on 13th Street on Saturday evening, and it was quite dramatic. The water was right up alongside the road. The baseball complex and other fields were completely underwater.
Well, Ames is a floodplain. This is what the rivers want to do.
Right, yeah, and you could see that. It was just the water was going where it wanted to go.
That's right. But let's get to today's show, Gail. Later in the show, we'll have Nate Loxton with us to talk about the Maximum Ames Music Festival. And we'll have a report from the immigration forum that took place in Storm Lake on Saturday. Allison Walter has joined us for a monthly update on public events. And Allison is the director of Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you.
And also Bronwyn Beatty Hansen is here.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's good to have you back. It seems like it's been a long time since you've been with us, Allison.
It has. It was early last month and late this month.
So let's talk about what's coming up.
Well, we've got lots of events coming up this month, and we also have our Ames Community Grant Program applications available right now.
So let's start with that.
Okay.
Bronwyn, you're taking the lead in the grant?
Yes, I'm on the committee that distributes the community grants that are awarded by the ACVB, the Convention and Visitor Bureau's Board of Directors.
Now, this is a grant that has been awarded by the Bureau for several years now.
Yeah, it's a program that's been in place since 2007. Every year they give money to various community organizations that are hosting public events. Since 2007, they've distributed more than $470,000 to community organizations for different public events around town.
And the money comes from where?
The money comes from the hotel motel tax dollars that are generated by visitors or people who are staying in the hotels and motels. And that tax money, part of that, 5% of the Bureau's share, goes back to the community as part of this community grant program.
Okay, so how much money is available this year?
So we will know by October when the grants are actually ready to be reviewed, but at this point, we don't actually have a final number yet.
Last year's number was $46,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been around 50 in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. So, Bronwyn, what is the criteria for applying for a grant?
Yeah, good question. So the criteria are it's got to be open to the public, an event, community event, open to the public. When we are grading these events, we're looking at events that are going to hold a wide appeal, so appeal to a broad audience, events that really increase the quality of life either for visitors or also for Ames residents. The ability to create a positive perception of Ames, demonstrate an enthusiasm and commitment for the project, and the ability of that event to attract visitors, but it's also to give back to the residents to improve the quality of life for community members as well.
Now, you don't have to be a nonprofit to apply for this.
No, true. Mm-hmm. Anyone can apply, whether you're a for-profit organization or not. Just the event itself does have to be open to the public.
So these are essentially for events.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And is this a matching grant fund? So the receiver also matches the money?
In prior years, that was a criteria. We did change the standards a little this year. We thought there might be some great events that might want to get started and not quite have the ability to do that matching fund. So that is not a requirement of the program.
Okay.
We do want to see the demonstrated enthusiasm and commitment from the organizers of the project. So it's nice to see that they've gone out and sought some other funding or have some other structure in place, but it's not required that they have matching funds.
And what is the deadline for this?
It is October 15th, Thursday, and we ask that the applications be in by noon on Thursday, October 15th.
And how does one apply?
You can do it online. Go to the website, which is visitames.com, or applications could also be picked up at the Convention and Visitor Bureau's location as well, which is on Golden Aspen Drive.
Mm-hmm.
There.
And can you give me or give us some examples of what kind of things you've funded in the past, just to kind of give a
sure.
sense of this?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of ones I'm sure people have heard of. So we have given some money to the Ames Main Street and the North Grand Farmers Markets in the past. Ryman Gardens got some funding for their 20th anniversary. The Main Street Firefly Country Nights have gotten mm-hmm. some funding in the past. And then mm-hmm. there are still a couple coming up yet that we have given funding to, some great events yet in September. Maximum Ames Music Festival, that's an exciting local event, and that'll be September 10th through the 13th. The Jack's Outdoor Family Fun Fair, that'll be September 19th. They got some funding. And then the Octagon's Art Festival, which is September 27th this year.
Well, judging from these events, this grant really makes a difference in our community.
Yes, I think it's really neat to see some of the events that this grant has gone to funding.
Now, who decides? Who judges the applications?
We have a committee made up of a variety of community members, some representation from the ACVB board, but then also community members not on the board.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had this grant in the past, so I highly recommend applying for this grant. It obviously plays a role in making our community really shine. All right, Allison and Bronwyn, what else do we have here for looking at what we do is we kind of talk about what's coming up in the near future in our community. We have some community events.
Yes, you know, the Ames sort of changes a little bit now that school's in session, the students mm-hmm. are back. But that means even bigger and better events for the community. This upcoming Thursday night is Music Walk here in downtown.
That's right.
And that's a great event that's been going on for, gosh, almost eight years now, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of the stores will have musicians in their business, and there'll be sidewalk cafes, and there'll be a kids' kazoo band, which should be kind of fun. So it's a great family event Thursday evening here on Main Street.
It's kind of a night out in
yeah.
downtown Ames to
yeah.
kind of with an artistic atmosphere.
Right. And, you know, sometimes you walk up and down the street, but you don't always get into that business. You know, it's maybe not something that you think you need or want, but it's a great – so this is a good opportunity to just wander in and out of a number of the businesses.
Yeah, it's a beautiful event. Well, we're going to have somebody here at KHOI.
Good.
During that time, so
wonderful.
Stop by KHOI as well and say hello to us.
Yeah.
Take a look at our studio if you haven't seen it yet. What else do we have? We have
well, we're kicking off the football season, you know,
yes.
this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
home game.
Yep. And then Campustown has started a new tradition of their Friday afternoon in Campustown event, usually before the first football game. And so they are having that this Friday from 5 to 10. And it'll have live music and a beer garden and lots of fun times. It's on Welch Avenue, and their performances this year are JC. She'll start at 5, and then the Pork Tornadoes play after her. So 5 to 10 on Friday evening in the Campustown area on Welch Avenue.
And that'll be on Welch Avenue itself.
So right. They'll close down the street there.
Like street party.
Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, and what else do we have?
Well, we mentioned Maximum Ames Music yeah. Festival. That's coming up.
That's coming up, and spoiler alert, Nate Loxton is going to be here from the festival later in the show today.
Great.
So we can talk about that more at length. Needless to say, that's a major music event here in
yes.
downtown Ames.
Yep.
And we'll be talking about that, so... What else do we have?
We have a unique opportunity this year with a Carillon Festival. There'll be a conference and then a public music festival. Tin Shi Tam, who is the Iowa State Carillonneur, plays the campanile on a daily basis. And she will be doing a Carillon duet concert with George Gregory of Central Christian Church in San Antonio. and Julianne Vanden Weingar of Grand Valley State University. And there'll also be some competition and performances involved with that conference. That's Friday and Saturday, September 18th and 19th. So it'll be a wonderful opportunity to hear the campanile playing more than it does on the regular daily basis. Ryman Gardens has their quilt show that same weekend, the 18th through the 20th, and they'll have working with the Iowa Quilters Guild to hold their 6th annual garden quilt show. And they look at quilting through the garden theme. So they'll have some beautiful quilts on display, and it'll be a juried show as well. So
sounds beautiful.
During their regular 9 to 4:30 hours, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 18th through the 20th.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful.
We mentioned Jack's Outdoor Gear, and that mm-hmm. this is their anniversary celebration, 60 years for Jack's Outdoor
wow.
Gear. So they'll have things out at their store, including a zip line and the Burnin' Sensations Band and all kinds of family activities, and that is Saturday the 19th. Mm-hmm. Which is the same day as Oktoberfest, a great new tradition here in downtown Ames. They'll have their polka dancing and music and games, all with the German Oktoberfest theme. And, of course, delicious food and a little German beer, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, September 19th, and that's from 10 to 6 all day.
And we have two events outside of Ames that are kind of big traditions, too, the Pufferbelly Days Art and Craft Show.
Yes.
In Boone.
Yep. That is September 10th through the 13th, and they'll have all kinds of activities going on around their train theme. And this is their 150th sesquicentennial. So we celebrated last year, and they're celebrating this year.
And then we have the storytelling.
Yes, up
event,
in Story City. Yep, and it's their 10th annual Story Festival, September 17th through the 20th. They'll have local, regional, and national storytellers all weekend long, and Connie Regan Blake will be their headline storyteller.
Mm-hmm. And just for you, the listener, I don't have this incredible memory of all the events in Ames.
There's a lot.
When Allison comes in, she brings this amazing spreadsheet, and that's what we're looking at.
They can probably hear it
rattling. It's really great. I mean, there's so many things here. We're kind of struggling with the clock, kind of figuring out, you know, how to talk about all this. This is very cool for horse lovers. There's an equestrian event.
Yes. The Hanson Ag Student Learning Center has a real variety of ag-related, animal-related event. And this is the Tough Enough Miniature Rodeo. And they're kids under the age of 18 that will ride miniature bulls, broncos, and they'll ride bareback. And there'll be a barrel racing competition as well as a wild pony race.
A wild pony race.
Yeah. So the Hanson Ag Learning Center is there on Mortensen Road near the Ames ISU ice arena, and always have something interesting going on animal and ag related.
So the wild ponies don't have people on them. They're just running?
That would be my guess. Yes. Yeah.
There's also the Special Olympics equestrian meet.
Yes. And in fact, there are two Special Olympics events this month, and you know we always think of the Special Olympics being here in May, but we have on Saturday, September 12th, the equestrian meet, and they'll have horsemanship, a barrel race, ball drop, keyhole race, baton rally, and much more. Again, that's at the Hanson Ag Learning Center, and then that same Saturday, the 12th, they will have a volleyball tournament, and they'll have teams from across the state competing, and they'll also have some developmental events. And I would guess there are a number of locations on campus that will be taking place at.
And then, of course, there's the Octagon Arts Festival.
Yes.
Big event. as well as a smaller event, which is the glass tour.
Yes. On Saturday, the 27th, mm-hmm. it's the 45th annual Octagon Art Festival.
45th annual.
Yikes.
My mom started that.
Did she?
Yeah,
yeah,
she did.
Wonderful. I knew she was involved with the Octagon. And, you know, it's a juried show, and they get hundreds of professional artists from across the Midwest. And I think that's, you know, part of the neat part about it is the wide range of artists and the how far they come from to Ames. That is Sunday the 27th from 10 to 5, and they kind of take over the Main Street Cultural District.
Yeah, they take all of Main Street, all of Douglas. Yeah. It's really a very beautiful festival.
And Art Sakati, who is a glass blower here in the area, his studio is out near Napier. And he will be doing a studio tour September 26th and 7th. And he'll be doing demonstrations at his studio as well as having things for sale.
So it'll be the demonstration will be out in the pier?
Yep, mm-hmm. at his studio. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, real quick, let's just look at a few of the regular events that just kind of keep going on. We've got the farmers markets, of course, which are really coming into their own.
Yes, Wednesday and Saturday you can take advantage of them up at the North Grand Farmers Market. Wednesday from 3 to 6 and Saturday from 8 to noon. And then the Main Street Farmers Market continues on Saturdays 8 to 12:30 through October. Some live music. Snooze Hill does their music series Fridays from 6:30 to 9:30 and Sundays from 2 to 5. And they always bring in really great musical bands and performers, and as does Prairie Moon on Sundays from 3 to 6.
Live at the Crib.
Yes.
All right, real fast, the athletic events. We've got a football game coming up this Saturday, and KHOI is going to be doing the pre-game tailgate show with the Gridiron Club.
Wonderful.
So that's this coming this Saturday, right?
Yep, and kickoff for the football game is at 7. And then the next week is the Iowa game, and that's a 3:30 kickoff on September 12th. We're also in the volleyball season, so you can watch the women's volleyball team. They take on North Dakota State on Sunday the 13th. They take on UNI on Wednesday, September 16th at 6:30. And then the next two Saturdays, it's Nebraska on Saturday the 19th at 4 and Texas Tech on Saturday the 26th at 1. And they play at Hilton Coliseum for all of those games.
Okay. And the Gridiron Tailgate Show will be from 4 to 6.
Wonderful.
On Saturday. Okay, thank you, Allison.
I think we hit the highlights.
It's really great to see how much stuff is happening, and it's such a diversity of interests.
And that's actually not everything that
was
on the calendar.
It's not everything,
no. Our calendar is on our website, visitames.com, and on the homepage you'll see a link to the calendar of events. You'll also see a button for the Ames Community Grant applications. Mm-hmm. You can always give us a call if you've got questions about any of these events or if you have questions with your application for the community grant. 232-4032 is our phone number, and we'd be happy to help you with any of those questions.
And that information will be on our website today, too, on how to reach the Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Wonderful.
I see there's also something about development of the atomic bomb here.
Yes.
There's an anniversary coming up.
At
the library.
A talk by Kathy Sveck and, September 9th. And
September
her father 9th. Was involved with
That's
that
right,
project.
That's right, Harry Sveck.
Yeah, so she has some unique insight.
Okay. We've been talking with Allison Walter from the Convention and Visitor Bureau and Bronwyn Beatty Hansen. Talking about the grant and the information about the grant as well. We'll have a link on our website, so it'd be easy to find.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, Gail.
It's going to be a busy month now. Yeah. The students are back, and there's so much going on. Things have really revved up. I look forward to it. Thank you.
porque es las horas, porque voy a enloquecer. Tienes la edad para siempre, cuando amanezca otra vez. No más nos queda esta noche para vivir nuestro amor. Y tu tic-tac me recuerda mi irremediable dolor. Reloj, detén tu camino, porque mi vida se apaga. Ella es la estrella que alumbra mi ser. Yo sin su amor no soy nada. Detén el tiempo en tus manos, haz esta noche perpetua, para que nunca se vaya de mí, para que nunca amanezca. Las horas, porque voy a enloquecer. Ella se irá para siempre cuando amanezca otra vez. No más nos queda esta noche para vivir nuestro amor. Y tu tic-tac me recuerda mi irremediable dolor. Reloj, detén tu camino, porque mi vida se apaga.
This is KHOI, and you're listening to Local Talk with Gail Seiler and Ursula Rudenberg. On Saturday, I had the opportunity to go to an event at Buena Vista University in Storm Lake that was called Unite Iowa on Immigration. Kyle Munson, a reporter for the Des Moines Register, was the moderator and one of the organizers. It was part of his Unite Iowa initiative. And the goal was to create an oasis for thoughtful dialogue on immigration in the midst of the divisive rhetoric that we sometimes hear about immigration, especially during the presidential caucuses. It was a free event, and anyone could attend. The organizers invited all the presidential candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, but only two candidates accepted the invitation, Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee. And the format was kind of unique in that first there was a panel of speakers from across Iowa, and the presidential candidates listened to that, and then the presidential candidates responded. That was kind of different, to have presidential candidates listen instead of just giving their sound bites. Yeah, that was unusual. The panel consisted of a number of people: Monica Reyes, founder of Dream Iowa and a student at NIU; Sandra Sanchez, director of the Iowa Immigrant Voice Program; Reverend Charles Valenti Hine, pastor at Lakeside Presbyterian Church in Storm Lake; Kim Hunter, an immigration lawyer in Des Moines; Joe Crockham, CEO of Musco Lighting, a firm in Oskaloosa; and Tamara Scott, the Republican National Committee woman for Iowa, and also with the organization called Family Leader. She was a late-minute substitution for Sam Clovis. Sam Clovis is a Republican politician and radio talk show host, and he was supposed to be on the panel, but he joined the Donald Trump campaign just last week as co-chair, and so he withdrew from the panel. So they added Tamara Scott at the last minute. One of the questions the moderator asked was about birthright citizenship and the 14th Amendment, and that prompted a lively exchange, and we're going to hear a little bit of that. We hear first from Tamara Scott, then from Monica Reyes, who herself has benefited from deferred action for childhood arrivals, and then from attorney Kim Hunter, and we hear the moderator, Kyle Munson, also asking questions.
I think it's a discussion we have to have. I went back to the Founding Fathers. I think you have to understand what their intent was in the beginning. And I found a great quote from James Madison. I don't know if I'm going to find it now. But it was basically talking about not abusing the system, that the 14th Amendment was in place for those who would give to the economic systems you talked about, because this is more than just any one area, to the industry of the country, to the well-being of the country, and not be abused by those. And I think he mentioned foreigners in it who would either go back to their country. We're now seeing this issue, I believe, in China, where there are high-rise hotels for people to come, have a baby, and then claim citizenship. And so I think we go back to the words of the founders who wrote it, the original intent. And I think it's clear when you hear James Madison, it was not to be abused.
Monica, I would imagine you would maybe disagree with that interpretation.
I would definitely not call it abusing the system. I have siblings that are U.S. citizens, and they were born to an undocumented mother. Do you know that they have to be 21 before they can apply for my mom to become a citizen? I don't think that's abusing the system. That's a long wait for them, for all the parents that are here that are having kids. I think they're having them because of wanting to build a family for love, not because they want to abuse the American system. They're not abusing the system by having kids and having that 21-year wait.
When you hear this birthright citizenship debate, Kim, what's your analysis?
Well, my analysis, I would look at actually the plain text of the 14th Amendment, which I think is quite clear on the subject. I don't know that it's appropriate at this time to go back to sort of a comment by the founders. What I will say about it, though, also is I think it's one of the things that makes us genuinely competitive as a nation. And so if you look at other industrial countries around the world that have restrictionist immigration policies and that have they have declining birth rates, they don't have enough young people being born in Italy and Japan to even maintain their current population levels in the United States, but for in-migration, we would also be in that same position because native-born citizens are not having children at a replacement rate. So I actually think it's also, ironically, perhaps, but it's something that makes us competitive as a country.
That gives the listener flavor of the way there actually were exchanges. So, again, often at these things, it's not really a conversation, but this one actually ended up being somewhat of a conversation. I think what Kim Hunter, the attorney, was getting at in keeping the focus on the wording of the actual amendment rather than the Founding Fathers' intent was interesting because the Founding Fathers, of course, were not alive when the 14th Amendment was passed. It was passed in 1868 during Reconstruction following the Civil War. After the panelists spoke for about 30 minutes, they were joined on the stage by the first of two presidential candidates, Lincoln Chafee, former governor and senator from Rhode Island. So we'll hear some of what Lincoln Chafee had to say.
Well, anytime you have a challenge, I like as the public servant to find answers to that challenge. And we certainly have one with 11, 12 million undocumented people in this country. And what are we going to do with that challenge? I think it's impractical to round everybody up and put them back to their original countries. That's just impractical from my view. And so how are we going to go about dealing with it? And I was in the United States Senate back 10 years ago in 2005 when there was a good bill put together by John McCain, Senator John McCain from a border state of Arizona, Republican, and Ted Kennedy, Senator Kennedy from a liberal from Massachusetts, and it was called McCain-Kennedy. And it was a path to citizenship, had border security, and that's 10 years ago. There were only 9 of us back then that would be co-sponsors of it, bipartisan, and conservatives and liberals, both Sam Brownback, a conservative Republican, and obviously Ted Kennedy. So a group, everyone getting together, trying to resolve this challenge that we had. And we're still at it 10 years later, still talking about it. We didn't get it passed back then. But it was a good bill. Learn English, border security, dealt with all the visa issues, essential workers that we need here to come in on visas. A very comprehensive bill. Also, I'll add, what I liked about that bill was the root problem of why people want to leave their homes and come here. That we have to deal with that. And that bill also had funding to deal with some of the issues in the countries that need better health care, better education, better building of the middle class. They don't want to leave their precious homes and come here.
One more question here, Governor. Latin American policy has been largely ignored over the past 16 years due to our engagements in the Middle East. This has led to many countries fighting the war on drugs by themselves and losing trust with the USA. What will your drug war policy look like regarding Latin America, primarily in countries like Honduras, Mexico, Colombia, and elsewhere?
Yeah, this is very important. You talk about refugees fleeing the drug wars. And my view is that we have to address this somehow internationally. Start with our hemisphere, but it's really an international issue. And the United Nations is stepping up. I think they're having a big conference on this in the spring of this coming year in 16. And that's just what we should be doing. All the countries getting together, the providers and the users, and trying to, it permeates every level of government and corrupts it. It corrupts obviously the law enforcement. It corrupts, gets so much money in it. It corrupts the banking system. It corrupts the judicial system, the judges. There's just so much money. And then the violence that's associated. I know Uruguay is leading the way on legalization and taxing and regulating in Colorado here in this country and state of Washington. These are all interesting, positive experiments in my view, because this is really bad out there. Refugees fleeing, it's a part of our immigration problem. As I said, the instability of these countries racked by this problem. So, again, as controversial as it might be, I think we have to think out of the box on this. And the United Nations and everybody coming together is the way to do it.
Next up was Martin O'Malley, former governor of Maryland. I would say that he was the most explicit about what he would do specifically regarding immigration. And he drew more applause than any of the other speakers. People had the opportunity to submit questions online in advance of the forum, and we hear the moderator using some of those questions here in this segment with Martin O'Malley.
Somebody had a detailed question on federal funding to provide dollars for ESL education programs that would provide intense English language reading and writing instruction for immigrant students for 8 years. Would you support that?
Yes.
Okay. Easy enough.
I was mayor of Baltimore before I was governor of Maryland for 8 years. And I think there's a lot we can learn from history. In our case, we received more immigrants in sort of the late 1800s than any other city in America, with the exception of New York. And the leading mothers and fathers of Baltimore at the time set up no fewer than a dozen schools that taught in German reading and math and English, because they realized at the time the truth that these new immigrant children were going to be the new Americans of their day and be part of the country that their children would also inherit.
We discussed sanctuary cities. What is your view of this whole debate on sanctuary cities?
I believe that all cities should strive to be compassionate places. And I believe that the label that's created of sanctuary cities is an effort to try to malign that which all good mayors understand as part of their job, which is to create an environment where people can be can live in a city and with openness and freedom and acceptance. And I think the real problem here is the dysfunction at ICE, where there seems to be only two speeds with ICE, on and off. In our own case, in our state, we had to set up our own parameters for honoring requests from ICE to hold people in Baltimore City jail, because we found that they were, in essence, applying a blanket rule which was breaking up families and serving no good public safety purpose. And furthermore, our own attorney general opined that ICE fails to provide the proper documentation that gives you the prima facie probable cause for which to actually hold an individual for ICE. So that's on ICE. That's not on cities. Cities should always strive to be compassionate places in our country and around the world. I believe that the best campaigns, the best candidacies, are those that lead with ideas and offer ideas that serve our national interest. And so we have put out by now 7 pretty detailed policy papers, and all of them are about rebuilding the truth of the American dream we share. So among the 15 strategic goals I've laid out for our country include not only making college more affordable and debt-free, not only eradicating childhood hunger, but one of those goals is comprehensive immigration reform. In our own state, driver's licenses for new American immigrants. We also passed the DREAM Act. That's the state version of the DREAM Act. And when our Republican brothers and sisters petitioned it to the ballot to try to kill it, we took that campaign to the people. We talked about the dignity of every individual and the full potential of every child. And we turned around what was a losing proposition at first. It was down, I think, 55-45. And we won that referendum with 58% of the vote. I believe that we are a good and a generous people. I believe that part of the formula for our success is not only the investments in our nation's infrastructure, educating our children in every generation at higher and better levels, a predictable and balanced rule of law, but also a sensible immigration policy. I kept a sign on my desk through all my 7 years as mayor of Baltimore and as governor, and it was from the late 1800s when my immigrant great-grandparents arrived here in this country. And the sign read, "No Irish need apply." And I always kept that there as a reminder that we are a nation of nations. We were all once strangers in a strange land. And it is one of the guiding truths and teachings of every great religion the world over, that we shall be hospitable to strangers. And that is why I parted even with my own party and my own president when the refugee kids from Central America were risking death in order to come here for refuge. And instead of treating them humanely, we were penning them up in internment camps. And we took more of those kids and placed them in foster homes in our state than in any other state on a per capita basis. And I believe that that is in keeping with the goodness of the American character and the generosity of the American character. And as leaders, if we speak to that goodness and that generosity, we can forge a new consensus. In all times when people are apprehensive about their economic future, it is easy for charlatans to scapegoat the other, people not like us, and the most recently arriving Americans. But that's not the future of our country.
Thank you.
That was Martin O'Malley speaking at the Forum on Immigration that was held in Storm Lake on Saturday. And that was the end of the presidential candidates who were there. And following Martin O'Malley, there was a brief wrap-up by the panelists. And then, of course, people had photo ops with the candidates, Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee. One other thing that was interesting was that the organizers tried to create a respectful environment, and another way they did it was they asked people not to bring in signs for particular candidates or anything like that. And they also kind of admonished the audience not to call out, to be respectful to the listeners. And the audience took that very seriously. And in fact, the audience was amazingly quiet, and there was actually very little applause, and there was no cheering. So it was not at all like a political rally. I would say that the only consensus that was reached among the panelists was that the immigration system was broken.
is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the time of the Maximum Ames Music Festival. So Maximum Ames is a local music label that supports and promotes Iowa music by releasing outstanding vinyl records and producing live events, and they are the people that produce the Maximum Ames Music Festival, which is coming right up. And their motto is All Iowa, All Art, All the Time. A business owned by Chris Ford, a scientist and musician, Chris Ling, a concert ticketing manager and a musician, and Nate Logsdon, musician, manager of rock bar DG's Tap House, owner of Cycles Recycling, concert organizer, a columnist for the Ames Tribune, and brand new father of Leo. As September comes around, so does the festival. And Nate has joined us to fill in about the festival. And I think this is your fifth year. Welcome, Nate. You brought the tune that we just opened up with. And you are well on your way to achieving your stated goal, which is making Ames the Athens, Georgia of the Midwest.
Like that town, we are, you know, very proud to be a small college town with a really unique and thriving musical culture. I think that that's kind of the connection there. And we're proud to represent Ames. We're proud to live in Ames, be from Ames, and so we really carry that flag, and that's why the word Ames is in the title of our business and is really the driver of everything we do, is to express our love for our community.
5 years ago, it was kind of a pipe dream, and today it's an established institution of our community, so congratulations.
Well, thanks very much, and you know, KHOI has been with us from the very beginning. KHOI has been our community radio partner for years. We used to have an office right here in the studio. Members of Maximum Ames have assisted in various ways in KHOI over the years, from serving on the board to helping with construction and fundraising. We used to produce concerts here, and we continue to produce concerts here. There's going to be an event here during Maximum Ames Music Festival, as there has been every year of the Pantorium's existence.
That's right. KHOI's existence in the Pantorium.
Right. That's
I'm assuming you didn't have concerts here while it was a dry cleaner. But
we would have been happy to if they would have liked it. Yeah, we've done concerts in stranger places than laundromats, believe me.
We are the new phase in Ames.
Yes, we are.
Radio stations and concerts.
Maximum Ames Music Festival is a four-day festival that happens every September here in Ames. It's an all-indoor festival. Unlike other great events that happen here in downtown and other festivals that lots of folks go to, which maybe sometimes happen in parks or in amphitheaters or on city streets, our festival is entirely indoors. What we do is we take a wide range of spaces within a three-block radius in downtown Ames, and we place outstanding artists in those spaces. Some of them are existing music venues, but the overwhelming majority of them are not venues. They are just a beautiful, sometimes historic, and always interesting spaces, cultural spaces, that we use as concert spaces. Mm-hmm. And so we create an excellent program of events over those 4 days that give music fans a lot of options for different types of listening and viewing experiences. And people kind of bounce around all over downtown Ames and just go see, you know, check in on stuff, see maybe I'd be interested in this, maybe I'd be interested in that. So you sort of self-curate this weekend of musical experiences. And we are just really proud to partner with such outstanding businesses and organizations and nonprofits here in downtown to make that possible and to have this wide range of spatial musical experiences for local music fans.
A weekend of immersion.
It is. Yeah, it's a very experiential festival, and mm-hmm. it's a festival that celebrates downtown. It celebrates Ames. It mixes legendary, historic, globally renowned talent with local talent that ranges from everything from, you know, some of the most outstanding artists we have in our community to beginners and amateurs and newcomers. So mm-hmm. we're just really, really proud to have that entire range of events. Each year of the festival, we've had over 100 acts performing over those 4 days. A total of about 300 musicians between all the different bands perform in those days. So I think in terms of the number of artists that perform, we're certainly one of the largest festivals in the state of Iowa. But in another way, you know, we could say we're one of the smallest, most intimate, in the sense that a lot of our events take place in rooms that can only fit 30 or 40 people. Mm-hmm. And we take pride in that. You know, the largest venue that we have on the festival this year is a maximum capacity of 600 people. Mm-hmm. So when you think festival, you might be thinking Lollapalooza, but we are really thinking of this experiential, multi-venue experience that prizes intimacy and in face-to-face engagement with artists.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that always happens in the festival is intergenerational song circle, which is at the Octagon, right?
That's correct.
That really epitomizes what you're saying. Describe that a little bit.
The Intergenerational Song Circle is one of the many showcase events that we do. One of our booking themes that we've developed in the festival is the concept of the showcase. This will be the fourth year of the Intergenerational Song Circle. It's an event that takes artists that span an age range of 5 decades, and it literally is a circle. We set up chairs in a circle, and listeners are welcome to sit in that circle as well, or to, you know, to mingle around it. And it's really like a passing the guitar event where, you know, sometimes the songwriters like to tell little stories about, you know, where they're coming from. And it's interesting because a song might have been inspired by an experience they had just had at middle school or high school. And then, you know, all the way up to someone talking about an experience that they had in the 60s or the 70s that inspired mm-hmm. the song that they're about to sing. And when you say all ages, people think under 21 is what you're thinking. But all ages means all ages. And so we just like to celebrate age diversity, events that incorporate a wide age diversity.
Nate's got a very young son who's less than a year old. Leo is part of musical events. So you really do mean all ages starting from the very beginning.
That's right. Yeah, he's a huge music fan. He's already been to many concerts. Uh-huh. And yeah, he loves going to shows. He was just at a show that I was playing on Saturday. He loved it. Yeah, he loves music. He's very comfortable in that environment. Mm-hmm. He listens to music a lot at home. Mm-hmm. He loves reggae. That's one thing we've been fostering in him.
Okay.
Yeah. But he loves all different kinds of music. And so yeah, the overwhelming majority of events at Maximum Ames Music Festival are all ages.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the venues that we use during the event are bars. The other 9 venues are all ages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really encourage, you know, people that are of all different age range to just take a look at the program and find the events that are interesting to them.
The Ames Women of Rock Showcase is also a tradition. People really love that event. Can you describe that a little bit?
That's definitely one of our signature events. That's mm-hmm. been a part of the festival since year one. The Ames Women of Rock, it's also an age diverse festival, but it celebrates an all-female lineup of singer-songwriters. Obviously, there's women in bands all over the festival, but this is kind of a chance to really celebrate female singer-songwriters in one event. It'll be at the Ames Public Library, which was also the host of the event last year. And this showcase format encourages sort of storytelling and people giving the background of the event, and you hear a wide range of voices. The women often sort of respond to each other. It's very dynamic in that sense.
I always get a real sense of reverence in the audience during that event. People just really love this moment of these women's voices in the middle of this festival.
The festival is as much a celebration of listening as it is of
mm-hmm.
playing.
Yeah.
I've always been amazed by the quality of listening that we've seen at the festival, and I think that's really what you're speaking to is, you know, when mm-hmm. this event really fosters that close listening and that attentiveness, not only their sonic, audible voices, but also their perspective, you know, where they're coming from, their artistic voice are really put front and center, and when placed next to one another creates this really wonderful, supportive dynamic. Like the Intergenerational Song Circle, it's a mix of people who have been playing for many years and people who are just getting started. And
mm-hmm.
so that's kind of that supportive environment kind of comes from that as well. And, you know, this is a very unpretentious event. This is a very
mm-hmm.
it's just a celebration of art and culture and people and Ames. That's the main thing. And we like to give people a shot who are just getting started, and but also mix that with world-renowned talent, like I've said.
So who is the headliner?
Each year we have two main headliners. This year the headliners are the Mountain Goats and Grandmaster Flash. The Mountain Goats is an extremely prolific artist, as well as a novelist who was nominated for the National Book Award last year for his novel Wolf in White Van. We love John, the singer of the Mountain Goats. He really epitomizes so much about we love about Maximum Ames Music Festival, especially that he used to live in Ames.
Mm-hmm.
We love to celebrate artists that have an Iowa connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Mountain Goats is one of the most well-known artists to have lived in Ames that is currently living,
mm-hmm.
maybe the most. The last time he played in Ames was at the first Maximum Ames Music Festival. And so we kind of are celebrating our own history. This is our fifth year. We wanted to celebrate our own history as well as our history with John. In the interim, too, he's done so much. He's had so many enormous accomplishments as an artist and grown so much as an artist too. But at his last appearance in Ames at year one, he took time to really tell the story of some of his classic songs and classic albums and tell stories that connected those two Ames. He was telling a story about one of his best known songs, which is called The Best Ever Death Metal Band Out of Denton, kind of a Mountain Goats classic. And he told a story about how it was inspired by an experience that he had while working part-time at Mary Greeley, which was only 2 blocks from the venue that he was playing at. And so it really connected the minds of the attendees
mm-hmm.
To the place. And mm-hmm. that really captures what we're about at Maximum Ames. I've kept bringing up this spatial, placed notion.
Sense of place.
Yes, mm-hmm. and John really, you know, we didn't tell him to do that. It's just that he picked up on that, and that's who he is as an artist. Mm-hmm. This time he'll be playing at the First United Methodist Church.
Beautiful venue.
Oh, absolutely gorgeous performance environment, as well as just a beautiful church, great cultural space. And so that's going to be a really wonderful show. And then Grandmaster Flash, the second headliner that I mentioned, he's a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was the first ever hip-hop artist inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is credited as being one of the founders of the genre of hip-hop. He is the first DJ to have ever used turntables as an instrument. There are many, many enormous innovations in musical history that can be credited to Grandmaster Flash.
And where is he performing?
Grandmaster Flash will be at DG's Tap House on Thursday, headlining. We have all these showcases. He's headlining another annual showcase that we have called the Varieties Showcase, which is a variety show. Every year we have a headliner. He will also be the first ever member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to have performed at DG's Tap House, which has been one of my longtime dreams, is to have I'm a big rock and roll history fan, and it's been one of my dreams to have a member of the hall
cool.
on our stage. And so you're going to be able to stand, you know, 4 feet away from really a living
this
legend
guy.
Of music. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so those are our headliners this year. And
okay.
But that's just the range that we have, from internationally renowned talent to
local
folks
that
you see walking down the street.
Okay, Jonah, I think Nate gave you the Mountain Goat song. So can you put that under us whilst we do the outro to the show? All right. Thank you, Nate.
Thanks so much for having me on. And thanks to KHOI for being such a wonderful partner. And to see the full schedule for Maximum Ames, go to MaximumAims.com. You'll also start seeing physical programs around town at all of the venues, and just scattered around town and in the paper.
Okay. And we'll link to your website as well on KHOIFM.org. That's MaximumAims.com. Thank you so much for doing this really great music festival. It's a real gift to Ames. It makes us sparkle. So thank you, Nate. Thanks for coming in.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thanks for joining us today. I've been your host, Gail Seiler, with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks to our in-studio guests, Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitor Bureau, along with Bronwyn Beatty Hansen, and to Nate Logsdon from the Maximum Ames Music Festival, which is coming up in September and sounds to be amazing.
Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's entire Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And there you will also find information about the people you heard today on the show, along with important contact information and links to their websites. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeese. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. But today we're going out with the Mountain Goats.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer reporters. We'll train you and you'll learn and love more about our community than you ever dreamed. We all do. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through the website khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see
you
again
on
the
radio.
Some were dead on their feet, and they came from Zimbabwe, or from Soviet Georgia, East St. Louis, or from Paris, or they lived across the street. But they came, and when they finally made it here, it was the least that we could do to make our welcome clear. Come on in. We haven't slept for weeks. Drink some of this. This'll put